When we think about the military, there's just this expectation of like absolute precision.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like engineering.
Exactly. You strip down a piece of machinery,
Okay.
you clean the parts, you follow the manual step by step, put it back together, and it just works perfectly.
Right, because it's a binary system. It's either functional or it's broken.
Yeah, and we take comfort in that visibility, in having manuals with these clear, unambiguous instructions that lead to predictable outcomes. But then you step into the world of human development.
And suddenly that maintenance manual is completely useless.
Totally useless.
Yeah.
You cannot apply a wrench to a human mindset and expect a calibrated result. And that is exactly the challenge we are unpacking today.
Welcome back to the sixth installment of our deep dive into the Royal New Zealand Air Force Mentoring Program.
It's great to be back. And this is really the hurdle every organization eventually hits, right? Yeah, exactly. So for you, the listener, you might remember from our previous discussions of the source material, we explored how the RNZAF strips away military ranks inside the mentoring room to foster genuine conversation. But removing that traditional chain of command creates a bit of a vacuum.
It does, because if no one is pulling rank, how do you guarantee those conversations are actually consistently high quality?
Right. How do you keep it from just being, two people chatting over coffee and deciding to call it mentoring?
Yeah, which happens a lot in corporate environments, frankly.
It really does. So today, our mission is to explore that massive structural shift. We're looking at how you move from relying on good intentions to executing disciplined professional practice.
How you train the guide, essentially.
Exactly. And we're drawing on a really specific stack of sources for this. We've got the RNZAF Mentoring Program Operational Handbook, their detailed workshop lesson plans, some internal annual reports, and this is crucial, the competency frameworks they have adopted from a civilian body.
The European Mentoring and Coaching Council, the EMCC.
Right. And looking at all of this, it is so clear that you can't just throw two people in a room and expect life-changing insights to, spontaneously occur.
No, you really can't. It has to start with a shared baseline.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Okay.
Because they actually establish that baseline through something called the Foundation Workshop.
Yeah, it's a mandatory 8-hour session.
8 hours. Wow.
Yeah, 8 hours. They offer it in person or online, and it serves as the formal entry point for both mentors and mentees. And that shared entry point is, well, it's crucial.
Because before a single mentoring session happens, both parties are equipped with the exact same vocabulary.
Exactly. The same vocabulary and the exact same expectations regarding what mentoring actually is.
And maybe more importantly, what it isn't. The handbook goes to great lengths to define the difference between coaching and mentoring.
Which is a distinction a lot of people miss.
Right, because in this specific military context, a coach directs actions to achieve an outcome. Think of like a physical trainer saying, do 10 push-ups to build muscle.
Right, it's very directive. Do this to get here.
But a mentor assists the mentee to determine their own actions. To achieve an outcome, they choose themselves.
It's a totally different dynamic. It's where do you want to go, and how can we figure out the best way for you to get yourself there?
Yeah, and that distinction really highlights the friction a service member experiences when they step into this role. Because military personnel are, highly conditioned to assess a situation, identify a problem, and neutralize or fix it immediately.
It is an entirely action-oriented, directive mindset, which makes sense for a military.
Right. But that's why I look at this foundation workshop as kind of a reverse boot camp.
A reverse boot camp. I like that.
Yeah, because the training actively rewires that instinct. It teaches the mentor the profound discipline required to, to not solve the problem for a person sitting across from them.
What's fascinating here is how they actually facilitate that rewiring. The RNZAF lesson plans introduce highly specific, non-directive tools. They don't just say, hey, be a good listener.
Right, because that's too vague.
Exactly. They teach mechanical frameworks to manage a conversation without taking control of it.
Let's make that tangible for the listener. Because if you've ever managed a team, you know that overwhelming urge to just give a junior employee the answer to save time.
Yeah.
Like, just let me do it.
Oh, absolutely. It's so tempting.
So to fight that, the training leans heavily on the GRW model. That stands for goals, reality, options, and will.
It's a classic framework, but very effective.
Yeah. So imagine a junior avionics technician comes to a mentor and says they want to cross-train into a leadership track. Instead of the mentor saying, here is the manual, take these three courses, they use the framework. First, they establish the goal, transitioning to leadership.
Right. And then they assess the reality. Like, what specific administrative skills is the technician currently lacking? What's holding them back today?
Then they move to options. The mentor asks the technician to brainstorm pathways. Could they take night classes? Could they shadow a commanding officer? They explore the landscape together.
And finally, they lock in the will. The mentor asks, based on these options, what exact step are you going to take by next Tuesday?
Yeah, so the mentor hasn't solved the problem at all, but they've provided a scaffolding for the mentee to build their own solution.
And when the mentee gets stuck on that reality phase, because sometimes they can't quite articulate how they feel about their current skills, the training introduces things like scaling questions.
Oh, scaling questions are great. Like, a mentor might ask, on a scale of 1 to 10, how confident do you feel leading a briefing right now?
Exactly. It forces the mentee to quantify an abstract feeling, which then opens the door for the mentor to ask, okay, you're a 4. What would it take to get you to a 5?
It just totally shifts the momentum back to the mentee. By formally defining mentoring as this inclusive two-way partnership, the framework creates a strict ethical boundary.
It does. And the handbook explicitly states that the mentee is never compelled to follow the mentor's advice. They own their actions.
Which is vital because, I mean, module 1 of the training is entirely focused on understanding of self. Mentors literally have to map their own cognitive biases so they don't accidentally project their own ambitions onto the mentee.
Yeah, that requires an immense amount of self-awareness. But that is just the foundation for a one-on-one relationship, because as you spend time in this program, it scales up.
Right. They move into group mentoring. And think about your own workplace. The moment you move from a one-on-one meeting to a group setting, the complexity of human dynamics multiplies exponentially.
Oh, massively. You suddenly have multiple realities and multiple wills colliding in real time.
Yeah. So how does the RNZAF keep these mentors from losing control of the room? Or worse, you know, creating a toxic echo chamber?
Well, scaling human-centric programs introduces significant risk. So group mentoring requires an entirely different operational toolkit.
Right.
The RNZAF equips group facilitators with structured intervention techniques. For example, the lesson plans detail a situation review tool called the Angel's Advocate.
I found that concept brilliant. Because we all know the devil's advocate, right? The person whose job is to aggressively poke holes in an idea and find out why it will fail.
Exactly. The cynic in the room.
Yeah. But the Angel's Advocate is the exact inverse. It's a structured mechanism where the group is forced to actively hunt for the hidden strengths, or like the best possible interpretation of a challenge.
It prevents the military instinct of hypercritical analysis from shutting down vulnerable brainstorming. It creates psychological safety by design.
But managing a group also means managing complex emotional states, right?
Oh, yeah. A mentor has to skillfully handle the dominant voices trying to commandeer the conversation while simultaneously drawing out the quiet voices retreating into silence.
It sounds exhausting, honestly.
It is. But they operate under this guiding philosophy of take what you want, leave the rest, preserving individual agency even within a team structure.
But this brings up a major point of friction for me. The source material talks about a safety net for all this complexity, something called supervision.
Ah, yes. Supervision.
Wait, supervision in a military context sounds a lot like micromanagement. I mean, we just talked about confidentiality and protecting agency. Are commanding officers sitting in the corner with a clipboard grading these mentors on their private developmental conversations?
I completely understand the reaction. And your skepticism is entirely justified. It highlights a massive cultural hurdle the RNZAF actually had to overcome.
Because if they're grading them, that shatters the entire foundation of trust.
Exactly. But if we connect this to the bigger picture of professional civilian practice, like in clinical psychology or social work supervision, it is entirely developmental, not disciplinary.
Okay, so it's not a performance review.
No, not at all. The military had to import this civilian concept and completely firewall it from the chain of command. Nobody with a clipboard is grading their performance for a promotion.
So how does it actually work mechanically? What happens in a supervision session?
It is a structured, highly confidential space, often peer-to-peer or facilitated by a senior practitioner, where the mentors themselves evaluate their own practice. It is essentially mentoring for the mentors.
Okay, that makes sense. So, like, let's say a mentor realizes they're feeling incredibly frustrated after every session with a particular mentee.
Right. In supervision, they present that feeling without breaking the mentee's confidentiality and explore it. They might realize through peer feedback that their frustration is actually countertransference. Yeah, meaning they are frustrated because the mentee reminds them of their own past failures, which is causing them to revert to a directive coaching mindset.
Wow. So supervision is the mechanism that catches the error before it damages the mentoring relationship. It's like a psychological diagnostic tool.
Precisely. It reinforces that mentoring is not a static skill you learn once in an 8-hour workshop. It is a living practice that requires constant maintenance.
Which protects the mentor's mental well-being, too.
Absolutely. Which in turn protects the reputation and efficacy of the entire profession within the Air Force.
That firewalling is really impressive. But let's follow the logical evolution of a mentor here. Say I've done the foundation workshop, I'm actively participating in supervision, and I've been doing this for a few years.
Okay, you're an experienced mentor now.
Right, and I hit complex psychological roadblocks that basic active listening just can't solve. Here's where it gets really interesting. The RNZAF doesn't just offer a pat on the back for your service. They offer a rigorous 24-hour, meaning a 3-day in-person advanced practitioner workshop.
Yeah, this advanced pathway is a major differentiator. This course is designed to move mentors from being competent volunteers to becoming intentional, highly adaptive practitioners.
People capable of handling immense psychological complexity. And the value proposition here is just staggering to me. We were talking about active duty military personnel who volunteer to be mentors. And the military is taking these individuals and providing them with highly sought-after, internationally recognized civilian qualifications, completely free of charge.
It's a huge investment. And the 2024 annual report actually names names, which brings this entirely out of the theoretical realm.
Yeah, I saw that. It highlights that operators like Russell Bone, Andy Armstrong, and Benny Austin have achieved global individual accreditation. And others, like Dan Hook and Pratik Grover, are actively on the pathway.
Seeing those names in the annual report matters deeply because it proves this isn't just an aspirational goal written on a whiteboard somewhere. It is a fully operational paradigm shift.
Because getting active military operators to achieve advanced civilian psychology and coaching accreditations while on active duty requires immense dedication.
It really does. The Advanced Practitioner Workshop dives into the deep mechanics of human development. It teaches mentors to identify deeply ingrained psychological processes, establish non-dependence so the mentee doesn't become reliant on them.
Which is huge.
Massive. Oh, yeah. And to apply impartial bias when exploring alternative career or life pathways, They are essentially training their people to mentor at strategic and executive levels.
But all of this advanced training, you know, the foundation workshop, the supervision frameworks, it's all tethered to the European Mentoring and Coaching Council, the EMCC.
The governing body.
So what does this all mean? When I was looking through the sources, I noticed there are several international governing bodies, like the International Coaching Federation, the ICF, is a massive one.
Very well known, yes.
So why did a New Zealand military force choose to govern their internal program using a European civilian accreditation body?
It was a highly deliberate strategic choice by the RNZAF leadership team when they were benchmarking the program around 2013. The distinction between the ICF and the EMCC is fundamental to how the Air Force views human development.
Right, because the International Coaching Federation, as the name implies, focuses almost exclusively on the metrics and mechanics of coaching.
Yes, it is heavily weighted toward that directive outcome-based model we contrasted earlier.
But the RNZAF places a massive emphasis on mentoring as a distinct, holistic, long-term developmental practice. They need a governing body that understands both.
Which is exactly what the EMCC provides. They value and accredit both mentoring and coaching as distinct but complementary disciplines.
That makes total sense.
Furthermore, the EMCC has a highly adaptable competency framework. It places a premium on reflective practice rather than rigid, unbending rules.
Which they need, right. Because they operate in a diverse bicultural environment in New Zealand.
Exactly. They require a framework that respects cultural differences and allows mentoring relationships to breathe and adapt to the specific human needs of their personnel.
It's not a one-size-fits-all algorithm, but I mean, claiming you follow a framework and actually proving it are two totally different things.
Oh, very different.
Which brings us to the auditing process. And it is incredibly rigorous. The EMCC doesn't just hand out accreditations because you paid a fee and took a multiple choice test online.
Not at all. The audit for the International Standards for Mentoring Programs in Employment, the ISMPE, is an exhaustive review.
An exhaustive review of what, exactly?
Assessors evaluate the entire architecture of the program, They review reflective logs. They analyze the design of the supervision frameworks. They look at client feedback. And they demand proof of continuous professional development.
Wow.
Yeah, it is a comprehensive portfolio review of the program's actual real-world impact.
And the RNZAF's performance in this audit is genuinely historic. In 2014, they became the very first military worldwide to receive the ISMPE Gold accreditation.
The first in the world.
The first. And they didn't just earn it in COAST. They maintained that gold standard, achieving a 100% pass mark in 2018 and again in 2022. On top of that, they won the European Quality Award for their training program.
A flawless pass mark from a rigorous European auditing body proves this isn't just an internal HR exercise generating favorable statistics for a slide deck.
Definitely not.
It is a meticulously maintained, globally respected machine. If we connect this to the bigger picture, aligning with these global standards builds massive credibility well beyond the military context.
It provides absolute quality assurance for the service members trusting the program with their careers.
Yes. And think about the incredible benefit to the individual service member. If you leave the Air Force, you take that EMCC practitioner accreditation with you into the corporate world.
Which is huge. Mm-hmm. It is a highly transferable, globally recognized civilian skill. You aren't just putting military mentor on your resume. You are arriving with a credential that Fortune 500 companies pay thousands of dollars to train their executives in.
It really raises an important question about organizational identity. The RNZAF isn't just running a mentoring program. They have systematically built a mentoring profession within a military force.
They really have.
They have recognized that sustainable mentoring cultures require heavy, continuous investment in the mentor's development, not just a fancy software program that matches people up based on a questionnaire.
It really is a masterclass in human capital investment. We've seen today how the RNZAF transformed mentoring from what could have easily been a casual, unstructured arrangement into a highly disciplined, accredited profession.
Step by step.
Yeah. They established a baseline with mandatory foundation training to shift the mindset from fixing to facilitating. They scaled safely by implementing supervision firewalls. They built advanced practitioner pathways to deepen the psychological craft. And they subjected their entire system to the uncompromising audits of the EMCC.
They proved definitively that effective mentors are not simply born with a natural gift for listening.
No, they are intentionally developed, supported through rigorous safety nets, and continually refined through deep reflective practice. Which leaves us with a final thought for you, the listener, to mull over today.
It's a big one.
We just detailed how a military force, an organization operating in a high-stakes environment where retention and mission readiness are literal matters of national security, intentionally provides its people with globally recognized civilian credentials.
They freely give their personnel highly transferable skills that make them incredibly attractive to outside employers.
Exactly. If a military force is willing to invest this heavily in the deep, reflective development of its people, knowing full well it gives them the tools to leave, what does it say about the corporate world, where companies so often hoard their employees' skills?
Terrified to invest in advanced training out of fear that those employees might take their new credentials elsewhere.
Right. It suggests a fundamental difference in how organizations view human potential. Are you training people just enough to do their current job? Or are you developing them to navigate complexity wherever they go?
Because if you don't invest in the murky, complex minds of the people operating the machinery, you are missing the most important piece of the puzzle.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the RNZAF mentoring program. We really hope it gave you something to think about the next time you sit down to guide someone's development.